Hello everybody, welcome to the New in Chess podcast, where we talk to grandmasters, authors, trainers, and other personalities from the fascinating world of chess. The New in Chess podcast is brought to you by DGT, the leading producer of chess clocks and sensory chess boards. My name is Dirk-Jan ten Huizendam. Today's guest needs no introduction, but then that's something I've said about many guests before proceeding to introduce them anyway. Let's stick to that routine, even if this guest really does not need an introduction, as today's guest is none other than the marvelous Judith Polgár. Judith is rightly seen as the greatest female chess player of all time. She not only topped the women's world rankings for a quarter of a century, I repeat, a quarter of a century, that is 25 years, but she also is the only woman ever to make it to the overall world top 10. Over the course of her career, she defeated 11 current or former world champions in rapid or classical chess. Judith became a grandmaster at the age of 15 years and 4 months, breaking Bobby Fischer's old record and becoming the youngest grandmaster in the world at the time. Her career is filled with records, firsts, and extraordinary achievements, and so it doesn't come as a total surprise that now there is a Netflix documentary about her unique career. It's called The Queen of Chess, and the film was directed by Rory Kennedy, the renowned director who made great films such as Ghosts of Abu Ghraib and Ethel, a moving portrait of her mother and the widow of her father, Bobby Kennedy, who was assassinated in 1968. I've invited Judith to talk about The Queen of Chess, but also about a dear friend of both of us, Jan Timman, who died on February 18. Jan and Judith not only met over the chessboard, but they also had training sessions together and shared a love for endgame studies. Judith joins me from Budapest, where she's in the middle of a press day for the Netflix documentary that has attracted worldwide attention since it premiered at the Sundance Film Festival in January. Judith, hello. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Hi there, Kian. Nice to be here. I'm fine, thank you. Busy,
yes. So we've agreed to talk about two subjects, about the film, the Queen of Chess, that that has come out, and we will speak about Jan Timman, our friend who died last month. We will start with the film. It has attracted worldwide attention. I think it's a beautiful tribute to your career and the things that you have achieved. Maybe you can say something about how the film originated. I mean, as far as I understood, there were a couple of people who were interested in making a film with you, and in the end, it became Rory Kennedy. How did that go?
Yeah, it was pretty interesting that when Queen's Gambit, the series, came out and hit more than 60,000 households, 60 million households, it was a huge, huge thing. And after that, I had been reached out by many different kind of filmmakers. And then by 2024, we had 4 serious ones from different places, from co-productions, and even 2 of them I had already several talks, few hours of discussions how it would go. And then we gave ourselves 3 weeks that, okay, let's decide after all, because there's so long time that we are discussing. And during this period, few weeks, which we gave the deadline to ourselves, Rory Kennedy wrote me a letter that, she had a pitch and she saw my story and she would love to talk to me. So I said, okay, why not? We are still in the time frame. So a few days later, we set up a Zoom call. We were talking and she was very energetic, very happy, very enthusiastic, expressing that, well, 1 week ago, she had no idea that I exist. In the chess world, she only heard about Bobby Fischer and Garry Kasparov. And how is it possible she never heard of my name? And my story is so amazing. And then we started to talk and discuss, and she told me that She wants to have it on Netflix, and she has all the every possibility that this can be such a fantastic film, and how happy she would be if my story could be known by everyone, not only in the chess community. And that's how we started, and very fast we agreed, and it was very interesting for me. There were two reasons also I went with her. And the reasons are that I think to tell my story, it was in better hands if there is a woman, female filmmaker. And the other thing was also very interesting, and I felt it as a plus and not a minus, that she truly has nothing to do with chess. So she will have to make her homework and work and editing and everything around that, that it has to be interesting for the outside of the chess community. And I think she made an incredible job with this. It was a pretty short time because everything was happening within 2 years. And we started in 2024, and then in 2026, January, the Sundance famous festival was premiering this movie. And well, it was a very new experience for me, that sitting in Sundance in the Akel Theater, 1,200 people watching, and when it was finished, they called me up on stage for a Q&A, and there was standing ovation, and like 99% of the people there had never heard of me before. So that was very touching.
But I guess you had seen the film before you went into that theater.
Yes, but not long much before, about 10 days before, because I was starting to promote the film with Good Morning America on the 19th of January. And I got the final product, the film, 3 days before that. So before the premiere, about 10 days beforehand, I saw the final version of the film, which was quite special.
It must have been very exciting because as the film was being made, I mean, she collected so much footage, did so many interviews, found so much archival material. And then, in fact, you don't know what the story is going to be exactly. I mean, what the focus will be on. Were you prepared for that when you first saw the film? Did you have an idea of what the focus would be on? Because with your rich career, I mean, there can be so many different angles that you can choose from.
Well, first of all, I did not know how long my life will be covered. This was one of the biggest questions. And of course, we were in contact during the whole time, as I was the one who connected Rory with the different people who was part of the film, including Garry Kasparov, giving contact to you, to the other people who took part. But I've been connecting Rory Kennedy with many other people also, so I had no idea who is going to be in the movie and who is going to be left out of the movie and how much people will be in there. I knew one thing, because it's a trademark of Rory that she's making no narration by herself, but actually the people, the participants, the who are taking part in the movie, they tell the story, giving the word from one to another, right? That's how the editing is working with her. So this I knew, and I was helping a lot with the archive materials, and she said that it was one of, if not the most difficult film from this perspective for her, because there are more than 160 sources of archives, different legal actions had to be taken, and it was very interesting to hear that. So I was helping with that and connecting with people, but I understood, I had a feeling like when I was talking with her, like she was dropping ideas here and there. So I was more or less, after a year or something, I understood that probably it's going to be going until I win against Kasparov. At the same time, I thought at the end there will be some parts where talking about my life now, because it's 2002 when I was playing that specific game with Kasparov. So it's kind of half of my life. So I did not know how she's going to be ending the movie. That was a complete surprise and something new. And I think it was very smart from me that I did not have expectations. I was not having expectations what I want to see on the screen, what until what moment. Of course, I was wondering a lot of time that, how it's going to be edited, how my father, how my mother, how my sisters, how the other participants of the film will tell the stories, how it's going to be edited, what are going to be the drama points of it. Kasparov was, I think, the last person who took part out of the participants. So that was also, of course, something very much dependent of the final outcome, because if Gary is in it in person, that gives a very different final touch and final version of the movie than if he would not be ready to take part in the movie. So many of the things were pending for a long time, but I think Rory was ready to have a different scenarios if he's in, if he's not in, if somebody else is not in, who to replace it with. But she had a very clear idea, I think, in her mind that it's going to be a sport movie where she wants to keep the tension until the very last moment.
Yeah. So what she chose as the narrative is the games that you played against Garry Kasparov. So it's the best female player against the best male player. And that is, in fact, let's say the skeleton of the film, where all the other things are filled in. Did you have doubts whether Kasparov would accept the invitation to talk? Because obviously there would come the moment where the famous touch move in Linares 94 would be discussed, which he might be not very eager to speak about. Or he might be neutral about it. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, I was not sure at all from the beginning whether Kasparov will accept to take part in the movie. At the same time, I have a very good relationship with Gary. We have mutual respect for quite some years already. And of course, Gary is smart. He knows exactly that if there is a movie about Judith, this incident, touch move incident, which happened so many decades ago in 94, it will be in the movie. You like it, yeah. You don't, you're appearing on the movie or not, it's going to be part of it. Because it was a symbolic story of chess. And of course, in a film, you have to find narratives and very clear, easy storytelling moments where everybody can connect, right? And of course, it's not so easy. And even today, I can say that it was not a positive experience what I had, even though I was the kind of the victim of this incident. But I can't say that I'm happy about it. I can't say that, and even today, up to today, I have this dilemma. Should I have acted differently? And, you know, I cannot really say that I would suggest any other young player in similar situation to act differently. So this story, I never thought it will be any beneficial in my life, but I see that in the movie, it was very beneficial to put the drama in. And I think Gary just simply knew it, that it's going to be there. So he preferred to be in the movie and talk about my career and how he changed and shifted his mindset and the view, how he saw me in let's say when I was 12 years old and he saw me for the first time playing in the Olympiad in Thessaloniki. And then later on during the years, how I improved my chess. He did not see me as a rival in his life, but he understood that I was clearly a top 10 player. And I'm someone who after some time he had to be careful in any of the chess games we played.
Yeah. No, I thought it was admirable the way he tried to be objective about that. And he didn't forget to add, let's say, about the touch move that he said, well, I mean, if I had moved that, I mean, I'm not lost, you know, it's still a draw. Those details he didn't forget to mention, and also how he liked playing against you, which was also clear from the score that he had. But gradually you see that increased respect that he shows, and actually that is beautifully done. I mean, I think his contribution to the film is really very important.
Yes, I think it's very interesting that there is while the film shows my career, my fights, my growth, it also shows a very nice arc in Kasparov's gross impersonality and how he was dealing with that. And that is a great part in the movie. That you see his growth, also how he changed his views about my chess, and that was something I think it was also added quite a lot to the movie.
Yeah, and I think there's also it paints a really nice picture of the impact that you had on chess, not only your personal career. But I mean, I vividly remember those games in Madrid, for instance, where your opponents, they simply rushed off, they didn't shake hands, and it was just totally ridiculous. But in fact, it was more or less the normal of the day, and these days that will not happen. I mean, they will sit down with a young woman and annotate because they have gotten used to it, thanks to your successes.
Well, I think many things changed since then, in three decades or four. Still, one thing did not change. People still not believe that any other woman can be in my footsteps.
Yeah, well, that was going to be my follow-up question. What work still has to be done, Judith?
Well, I think the mindset shift is the main issue. Because until the point when parents don't see their daughters be on the same level and play on the same level as other boys of age 8, 10, 12, 13, 14, 15, it will be almost impossible. If you don't have the very clear support system in mindset, because the things that you have the training, that's a secondary from this point of view. If you have a vision that I have my daughter, she likes to play chess, some people say she's talented because she won some games, then think about it that she plays good chess. So get a trainer who can improve her chess and not to think about it to limit her. Let's play good chess in girls' competition. Let's have a trainer to reach the girls' title. You know, if you limit that, then it's a torsion. It's not the right perspective to raise a kid to limit. It's like you're not saying that in the math class, I want my daughter lower grades are just enough. If the boys have the best grade, for my daughter, half of it is enough, right? You don't say that.
Well, I'm not sure about that. Maybe in education there are similar things that can be improved.
But generally, maybe you're happy with your daughter to not to be so fantastically great, but you're not saying it because you're a girl. You say, okay, it's not so important. You're good in something else, right? But in many times in chess, what I see that parents are very impatient with results. From this, it gives the coaches also to be impatient, and we know you're quite some decades in chess. You've seen a lot, I've seen a lot. Patience is something essential for the growth in chess, because sometimes half a year passes and there is no growth in rating points or in anything that you can measure in a talent. They know more, they understand more. But the chess game is much more complex than that. You have to play well the opening, you have to play well the middle game, you have to be careful not to blunder so heavily. And even if you're winning, you have to make a good time management, and you have to go to the end game and then to show your theoretical knowledge, and then do this day after day in a 10-day tournament, right? So it's very difficult to have the theoretical knowledge converting it into practical results. And this happens many times that the parents are not patient enough, and that has to change. And also that they don't see the girls as reaching girls' achievements, but achievements in chess.
But then, let's say some critical listeners, they will say, well, how much encouragement should you give? And look at the experiment that the Polka sisters were a part of. And was that such a good experiment? I think one of the touching moments in the film is at the end when you sit down with Rory Kennedy and she more or less asks you, well, so how do you look back on this? I mean, being the guinea pig of your parents' experiment or your father's experiment, and you fall silent. And it's something that probably you still think about regularly, of what the benefits and what the drawbacks were.
Yeah, but the thing is, there are positive things and drawbacks in any family, I must say, you know? It's not about my special way of raising, because every family has a very different dynamic and starting point. Whether you're rich, you're poor, your parents are supportive, you're divorced, you have a different approach, which country you're born into, is it a democratic or dictatorial? I mean, there's so many things in every family when you have a child, right? A starting point. The reason I'm hesitant and thinking, which was, of course, I mean, let's face it, of course, Rory Kennedy knows exactly how to edit a film to put the drama into the silent part and into the thing. So she made an extremely tense and interesting ending from this point of view. But the thing is, I can't complain. I'm very happy the way my life was going and how it turned out to be. And, you know, when you make a documentary and you're there from morning to evening and you're asked many different questions in many different angles, of course, and you answer it several times, of course, the filmmaker will grab the way she wants to form it, right? So if you ask me like that, was I happy with my life, how it turned out to be, I don't have to think about it. Of course, because the things I reached, the life I have, the personality I became, I have my sisters, everything. At the same time, I can say, of course, it was not a piece of cake all the time. At the same time, you ask a kid, I ask my daughter and son, is school a piece of cake? They can go day long and tell their problems with that. That no, they were bullying me, the teacher was this bad, and they were requiring me to say something which they didn't teach properly, and then we can go on and on and on and on and on and on. So, but of course, there are a lot of things why this worked out. And the starting point is that both of my parents are teachers. So they have incredible skills to make the kids love what they are doing. The other thing is that we were living in a very modest condition. So my father really thought that this can be a breakout opportunity to have a much better life for his daughters than he might have himself. And those things are something that shouldn't be neglected in the whole story, because it is something very, very serious. And also where we come from a Jewish family, Jewish background, Holocaust survivors, and why my father had this incredible drive to do it for years, for decades, and my mother being supportive on it. So that's a very complex matter. And of course, most of the parents, they are not ready to sacrifice their weekends, to sacrifice their holidays, to sacrifice their fun time with friends. Contrary to my parents, for them it was everything. This was their work, this was their family life, this was the education, this was everything.
This podcast is brought to you by DGT, the chess innovators. At DGT, We want to bring people together and help them grow through play by supporting chess and creating innovative, high-quality products for players everywhere. To find your nearest DGT dealer, please visit our website at dgt.nl.
I thought there was a great scene where it, I mean, there's always the risk that, let's say, your father who instigated this, that he became mild and that he would now say, well, some things I should have done differently. No, he said, well, she didn't become world champion, maybe if she had worked harder. And I thought that was such a great detail that he remained true to his inner self.
Oh, absolutely. He's going to turn 80 this year, as my mother as well. And my father didn't change a bit from this perspective, that he does believe in his way of thinking up to today, that you have to focus and spend as much time as possible in getting the best results when what you're focused. Of course, up to today, my father time to time asks me that, when am I planning to return to chess and compete, say, you know, because he would be so happy to see me. This is why it was so a fantastic moment for me when I was playing with Magnus Carlsen in the Retiro Park, just for the cameras, and then it happened to be that I won the game. And actually my father was there, because I took with him for a few days to Madrid. And, you know, for him it was something amazing. He said, you see, you can beat Magnus. You see, you have to come back and play and compete. So for him, chess and me competing, it was something that it was a very big heartbreak for him that I stopped and I retired in 2014. He just, up to today, he cannot understand. I mean, this is the best thing. It's creative. It's beauty. You're good and everything.
Yeah. Well, and he, it's also clear that he, there is this moment that he no longer decides what you and your sisters are going to do. And I think some of the most touching moments are in the film when Gustav, your husband, appears on the scene, and he adds a totally new perspective on you, on what course in life you will follow. He's the, let's say, the opposite of your father there. He's understanding of the other things you want to do in life. That must have been touching for you to watch as well.
That my husband Gustav was on, and he was sharing that he gave the secret to me, how actually the results in chess, there are three results, not only two, winning and losing. There is a draw. So, of course, with him, it's not only that my life became richer, but he's a big sport fan generally. And he's a good strategical thinker, long-term thinker in many ways. And of course, I was always a tactical player, and I was very much on the concrete side. Like, okay, let's go for it, black or white, right? And next to him, I was able to calm down, to think it over a little bit more, and have a richer perspective on my chess career and my play of chess. And what was incredibly important, he was 100% supportive. Not only that, in some of the tournaments he was traveling with me, and he learned it very fast, what it is to support a chess player, when to talk, when not to talk, when just walking around. At the same time, you know, he always asked questions after the game. Why did you do this? Why didn't you do that?
And he
always appreciated me that I was reacting, even whatever happened in the game, I was patiently answering on his question. But he became a huge supporter. He was following all the other chess players, who won, who drew, who was like this and that. So that's why he could support me so well. And indeed, he gave such emotional support also while on tournament, and also making a lot of background work when I was at home so I could quietly have my training sessions. it meant that I could be enter into the top 10 and stably stay there for altogether. I was like more than 1,000 days in top 10. So that stability was very important for me. And well, yeah, I mean, the film, you can see how my father was reacting on him generally, that he became a little bit more in the background after that. But we shouldn't make and spoil the whole film. We have to tell people still they will get a lot in the film if they
well,
haven't
there,
seen
there,
it.
There's a lot to be watched there. I mean, the I think that there's many highlights, and well, I would recommend anyone to watch him if you're interested in chess and if you're interested in good stories. One of the people who briefly appears in the film is Jan Timman. Our friend of both of us who died last month, and we agreed to speak about him. I mean, you've played against him as a chess player during a period of something like 10 years, and then you had training sessions together because there was a click between the two of you. It's an idiotic question. But still, I ask, how do you remember Jan? I mean, what is the first thing that comes to mind when you think about him?
Well, the first thing what comes to mind, that he was having this childish smile, being funny, and being an artist. So the first time I met him, it was 93 Imopar in November, the Imopar Trophy in Paris. And we played the Champs-Élysées Theater, and it was a knockout event, and every match was in set up the stage and only two players playing, and the arbiter was sitting next to it. And it was the first time I heard that, well, Timman doesn't think too much about women chess, you know. And so I was preparing my game with Pologayevsky. At the time, I had some training sessions with him, and he lived in Paris. And I played with Timman, and I won in the match against Timman. I played with Black first, and it was a Zemish, and it was quite a nice game. And in the next game, he had a must-win situation, and I won again because he was risking.
Well, and in the first game, he could have taken a draw, but apparently he clearly wanted to win, and he kept playing for a win.
Yes, yeah. Of course, in the Zemish, I was sacrificing several pawns, and it was clear that he wanted to win. And I won that match, and later, maybe a year or two later, we were meeting in Dortmund. Mm-hmm. And no, maybe it was more time. And he started to make a series with a Dutch filmmaker. And he made an interview with me. I played my game against Ullman in Amsterdam. I think that was, I'm not sure, 90 or 91. And he told me that specific game, when I beat Ullman in that game, I was sacrificing very nicely to take initiative. I sacrificed two pawns for pushing my pawn, controlling the center with the knight on e5, playing f4, g4, my trademark. That was the game when he realized that, I play good.
And he showed part of that game in the film, didn't he?
Yes, that was recorded for the film.
Yeah.
And that was, of course, a huge thing for me, because it did not happen very often that you meet someone in person who has no big respect and doesn't seem that respects you, that how good you are. And then they grow. So he grew that during the years that he was watching. And then there was this point when I played with Ullman, and he said, this was the point when he turned and said, okay, this girl is talented, she knows something. And this was a big support for me in that tournament, that he admitted and he said that this is the point. And then later on after that, it was interesting that somehow we were talking and he was visiting to, I invited him to come to our summer house. And he visited Nagymaros where we were staying most of the time in the summer. And I think it was 90s. I don't remember exactly when, but late 90s. And it went also on for beginning of 2000, even for 2005 World Championship when I played in Argentina. Before that, we had some training sessions. And actually, the game I won against, Kasymjanov, which was one of the nicest game I played. I think that specific line in the Nydorf, the peace sacrifice, we were working on that together. Uh-huh. And analyzed okay. it. So, yeah. And then later on, it has many occasions. He came to Hungary. He had a good time in the very beginning, in 99, I remember, when I was just dating with my husband. We were together already, but he joined me when once I went to Amsterdam to work with Jan. And he was always so precise. I knew exactly that if you go to his place, you cannot go 1 minute earlier or later. Be precise, exactly on time. So all the time I was paying attention on that.
Yeah. And he also, he had his discipline that, in those days, he liked to drink a glass of wine. But he told me, he said, well, we have these sessions. I mean, it's only in the evening. I mean, and you even took care of the wine sometimes that so that he would have some nice wine to drink in the evening.
In Hungary, yes. And yeah. my husband was taking care of that. But and it was funny. Like he was always very cheerful and told a lot of stories about his match with Karpov and all kind of different things. And of course, like he was the best of the best, the famous sentence everybody called him. I mean, it was an incredible breakthrough, and I understood that he was real artist. I mean, some of the old pictures we can see about his room, you can see that it's full chaos, right? But somehow he had this hairstyle of long hair and thinking about the moves, and he had a very special way of thinking, like. Clarifying things very well, I think, and structuring in his head what is the strategy, what is the preparation about. He understood, of course, the psychology of the game, because when he was playing with the Soviets, of course, he had to. There was no choice not to understanding it. And of course, I admired him a lot. We both had a great passion and love for compositions.
Yes. Yeah, that was clear, and but also it was clear that he respected you as a player, well, which he should, because your score in general is quite good against him. But I mean, you could see from the way he talked about you or the way you worked together that, I mean, he wasn't thinking about I'm working with a girl or anything. It was just we are two chess players, and it's about the essence of the game that we are talking. And I thought that was, well, you would say that should be a normal thing in life, but we both know that it, normally speaking, is not. There's always this gender gap in some manner. And with him, it felt very natural the way he,
But you know, why is that? And this, I think, has to be clarified, and I also tell it to girls when I talk to them, not 10 years old and 12 years old, but when they are 15, 18 and becoming a woman, that I was very much paying attention, focusing what's going on the chessboard, and I wanted to impress my trainers, my opponents, myself, my sisters, what I know on the chessboard. And I was also very much paying attention on my dressing code, that I was wearing things, well, most of the time I was wearing pants and not very feminine open tops or anything. And I think that was important. And I had, of course, great respect for them. But I was working very hard to gain respect from them as well. And it took time. For some people, it was faster. With some people, it was slower. But yeah, Timon, that's why it was a very big thing for me, because after all, he, when I was working with him, he was not at the very top anymore. But of course, Timon was always a legend, and hopefully stays a legend and we can keep his memory. But yeah, that was something really big for me, that Jan Timman, who had his opinion about women chess, he looks at me as a great chess player, as an original player, has interesting ideas, and we are battling it out, and we are, you know, talking, no, this, and, you know, it was a kind of entertainment for him also, that he was experiencing something that maybe he thought he would never experience, to have such a chess battle and analysis with a woman. And probably it was for him also a special experience, as for me, that a legend like him was clearly expressing it, that he had great respect, and not necessarily saying it, but acting and behaving the way he was doing it.
You love chess? Why don't you try New in Chess? With readers in 116 countries, New in Chess is the premier chess magazine in the world. What will you get? Exciting chess games explained by the best experts in a clear and accessible way. On-the-spot reports of the biggest events. Top-notch instruction. Independent journalism. Chess history that comes to life. And great interviews. New in Chess, the way you want it. The beautifully produced paper edition or the digital edition for phone, tablet or PC. Give it a try. Go to our website newinchess.com/magazine for more information about subscriptions and special offers.
Well, there is this fine moment in the film where he talks to you and he suggests that maybe you have too much respect for Kasparov, and that is what stands in the way for a possible win against him. But of course, there he was not only talking about you but about himself as well a bit. I mean, it.
I
think it went.
Yeah, this is what I want to tell also, mm-hmm. when you just said that he talks about himself, that of course, everybody had this. It's not about being a girl or someone. Basically, Gary came to the board and something happened before the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had such an aura, he had such a presence at the board, right? That somehow immediately you said, I'm small.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
the people who know Kasparov, you know him for like 40 years or at least 40 years, I guess. And this was the case. I remember discussing this with Jan, that how is it possible that very strong players, the strongest players in the world, they make mistakes they would never make if it's not Kasparov sitting across the board.
Yeah.
You just make stupid mistakes, stupid decisions, you know? I mean, why don't you just make a draw? He plays the King's Indian, take D takes E5, exchange the queens, play knight D5, draw. How is he going to crush you?
Yeah.
Right?
That's true. But it's funny because you were talking about your first meeting with him in Imopar. And actually want to share a story there, which I thought, well, it's a personal memory, because he comes to Imopar and he's won that tournament. I mean, the big success in his career, or one of the big successes in his career, was in 91 that he first beat Kamsky, then Anand, then in the semifinals Karpov, and then in the finals he beats Kasparov, and well, everything great. And then in this year, he's playing you in the first round, and he gets knocked out, which was tough. And one or two weeks later, we did an interview for a newspaper, and we had this rule. I said, I mean, we were good friends, but whenever we did an interview, the moment the tape starts, you cannot take back anything that you say. So that was the rule. So and I said, I'm going to ask you difficult questions, and whatever you say, that's the answer. So those were the rules. And then we get to talk about Imopar, and I said, well, that was painful that you got knocked out in the first round by Judith Polgar. And he says, yes, but you know, after that game, I really followed the tournament very closely. I mean, I was studying all the games, and so it was a good training after all, because I think he was preparing for his match against Short. And then when the interview was done, I said, Jan, do you remember what we did that afternoon? He says, what do you mean? I say, when you lost to Judith, you came out of the playing room. That was the moment I arrived in Paris. We went to the bar, and I don't think we left it that day. and he looked in surprise, and he said, yes, but still, I really studied those games. Probably he did. But I thought it was very funny. But, yeah.
I don't remember that he shared that story with me, but...
No, probably not. But as you say, there was this shared passion for studies. And he was also very happy when at your festival, you had this Paul Benko competition. And probably one of the last times that you met, I remember in Amsterdam. I mean, you'd barely said hello, and then he was showing you a study, and it was so natural, and as an act of friendship, you have to see this.
Yeah, of course, we had both of us. I mean, I think we liked not only chess but the artistry of chess. And it's not only in competition, but also in classical games, that what a fantastic idea. We were very much passionate about the beauty of chess. And I was also composing just a few studies, compositions, but he was incredible because many of the games he was analyzing, he was very analytical. So he was very much looking, and of course it's before the computer times, right? Like, he was really incredible analytical person. And he was going back and forth and clearing for himself the ideas. And whenever he found an amazing idea and it did not work in a game, he made it in a composition. He cleared it the way that it became a beauty in its own way. I was always a fan of practical compositions. He was doing very complicated one also, which I was not so big fan. I appreciated his brain that he can develop those two. But I was always very much impressed on the clarity and the freshness of ideas, how he could make it. And he had the patience for it. He was working on it for days, for weeks or whatever, and he worked it out until it was. And now I remember exactly in Amsterdam, at the Levitov tournament, there was organizing. And I remember exactly the study also he showed. It was just amazing. Usually he liked to make study compositions long. Like he had a pretty long line. So sometimes I like to cut some parts. But he had a very straight, very clear way of thinking. And he was composing. And he had this patience to do so. And because of that also, we gave my foundation, the Judith Polgar Chess Foundation, a few years before, the Chess Artistry Ambassador, because I believe that he really was representing so much of artistry in chess as a player, as a top player in the world, as a passionate chess lover. Like, he loved chess so much, and he was ready to play, to fight, to analyze, to be an author, to share his knowledge with everyone. And I think he was always ready to share his puzzles to grandmasters and older colleagues, like in Amsterdam you mentioned, but also for weaker players to explain in details why this is so beautiful. And I'm so happy that I had a very nice interview talk with him when we give this ambassadorship award for him. And it was very nice. So maybe sometime I will look back on that.
Is it still on the website or?
It's on a YouTube.
Okay, it's on YouTube. Yes. Oh, very, very good. Oh, yeah, it's so people should watch that. I thought it was a miracle that Jan, who was such a ferocious fighter in his, let's say, active career, that he derived so much pleasure and satisfaction from doing these studies in his later years. And it was something that you could see it made him happy. It was something that was very, well, gratifying.
Yes, I think he had this love, the game of chess, and it stayed there forever.
Yeah.
And for him, it was not important. At some point, you know, I remember very well in 95 that he was struggling very heavily, that he was not the same competitor, chess player on top of the world as he was for so many years. And yeah. And this struggle was very painful to see, though it gave me an incredible lesson, what I've seen him going through. And and I know that I learned it, that no matter how great you are, at some point you may not be so good anymore. And it's not because of your knowledge is missing. It's because not priority in life, or you're not interested, you don't have the motivation, or the new generation comes. But still, you have to respect yourself and appreciate the things you've done and still you can do. But I do hope, and I felt that he found himself in being a great author and writing books and sharing his knowledge and creating these amazing chess studies. But of course, it was not easy for him to deal with that, because many people don't understand and don't know how it is when you're on the top of the world and you're the shadow of yourself in some ways as a competitor. But still, he was, of course, amazing, amazing, amazing after that also.
Those are beautiful words, Judith, and very much appreciated. I think it's a perfect tribute to Jan Timman. Thank you very much for finding time to speak to us about Jan Timman, and of course about the Queen of Chess, which everyone can view on Netflix. Do you have any ideas about viewer numbers, or is that something they don't share with you?
In principle, I think usually they don't share, though I'm trying to get numbers and figure it out off the record. But I know one thing, that Netflix is very happy with the viewership. And also we have this thumbs up on the cover. So some of the most liked films from the audience who watched it. And that was the last big thing that they shared with me, that that's something very, very special, and they're very proud of the film, and the film is doing great, and so many positive feedbacks. So we are sharing the feedbacks with Rory also on text. You know, I got this today, and then he says, I got that today.
I'm especially pleased by how many people who are not directly involved in chess react positively to the film, and they are thrilled by your story and the way it's being told by Rory Kennedy. So thanks a lot for that too, and good luck with your next interviews today. It was a true pleasure, Judith, as always.
Always great to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the New in Chess podcast. The New in Chess podcast can be listened to on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the New in Chess website. To leave a comment, go to our socials or email us directly at podcast@newinchess.com. If this podcast has gotten you in the mood to read a fine chess book or to subscribe to the wonderful New in Chess magazine, then please have a look at our shop on our website, newinchess.com. where you can treat yourself to a great read. We thank our sponsors at DGT for their support and hope to have you back for a new episode of the New in Chess podcast.